Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about bringing clarity from chaos with Marketing Director of Clear MNC Saatchi, Geraint Jones. Plus great business marketing with the Director of Session Media, Ben Brown, and going on a business marketing career journey with Account Director of Born Agency, Sean Cole. COVID-19 has wreaked chaos across marketing plans and marketers' careers over the last 12 months. But there's a clear path out of this chaos if we learn from the experiences of the CEOs and CMOs around us. So argues Geraint Jones, who is Global Marketing Director of Clear and who joins us now. Geraint, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So good to see you. Before we dive into your report from chaos to clarity, perhaps you could tell us a bit about Clear.
Yeah, of course. Clear's the global strategy consulting arm of the MNC Saatchi Group. Been around since about 2002, and our capabilities go all the way from business consulting through brand consulting through to innovation and experience consulting primarily. We work across all sorts of different sectors. We've got a good heritage in FMCG, in financial services, in retail, but we also have huge amounts of experience in all sorts of other territories. And we're in six markets around the world. And it's a fun place to work.
Cool. So we're talking today about Clear's report from chaos to clarity. That involved you're speaking to lots of CMOs and CEOs, I think. So perhaps you could start by telling us who you spoke with.
Of course. So we actually started by going out to our colleagues, the senior leaders of the rest of the MNC Saatchi Group, right around the world, to sort of understand the almost the agency and consultancy perspective on what it is that clients and CMOs in particular need to be focusing on in order to have sort of strategic impact on their businesses, to sort of wield strategic heft in the boardroom, if you will. So we started that process sort of June last year. And then in sort of September, October time, we went out to speak to about 700 CEOs and CMOs in a number of markets around the world, the US, UK, China, Germany, and Singapore. And our aim really was to understand how those business leaders managed or were managing, in fact, the chaos of both 2020 and everything that came with COVID-19, but also the stuff that came before that. Because I think our thesis, as you'll see if you read the report, is that chaos is not a new thing. It's not something that marketers have only just had to deal with. Yes, COVID brought its own specific chaos to the table, but actually there are so many different forces of chaos at play in the day-to-day. And actually our suggestion is that many of those things are gathering pace, both as a result of the behavior change driven by COVID, but also as a result of just the world changing.
And I think that, you know, one of the ideas that has been in circulation, certainly pre-COVID, that you challenge in your survey is this idea of the death of the CMO. I wonder if you can explain a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think, look, it's in our best interests as a business that works very closely with CMOs and CEOs and chief brand officers and chief growth officers and chief commercial officers to create a dialogue and a trust between those different roles in the boardroom. There's nothing more challenging to us as a business than if the CMO doesn't wield any influence with their chief executive. And I think what we have consistently found, both particularly during the COVID crisis, but also even prior to that, is that this idea of the death of the CMO is sort of over-egged in a lot of ways. There are some CMOs in some industries who find themselves kind of backed into this idea of sort of just being the promotional part of the business, actually doing one of the four Ps, as Mark Ritson would say. But there are many CMOs, particularly those who have invested in their own personal development, who've invested in their team's development, and who've invested in understanding languages outside of marketing, the language of finance, the language of strategy, the language of technology, that actually wield an enormous amount of influence inside their businesses and are seen as, you know, strategic guiders really for their chief executives. And it's proved out in the data, really. I mean, of the 700 we spoke to, I think 51% of our survey respondents that we spoke to, and actually 59% of the chief executives we spoke to, say that marketing's influence is increasing inside their organization. And there will some who will have read the Gartner study recently that's also recently come out, saying that actually the CMO is the least trusted role in the boardroom. So you'd argue, well, how do you square those two things? I mean, my suggestion is fundamentally that you can be both one of the more impactful roles in the boardroom, but also be seen as difficult to understand and difficult to handle and manage. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive.
Why do you think people are saying that marketing has increased and influenced?
I think partly that's driven by the shape of this crisis. It's been a customer crisis in a lot of ways. The change has been at the customer level, whether your customer is a B2B customer or a B2C customer. Because human beings' lives have changed quite so dramatically that the needs and the behaviours of those customers have changed in all estimation from what we had before. So I think, of course, marketing is going to increase in influence, because marketing, if it's done well and if the business is run well within the marketing department, it's the department that understands that customer better than anybody else. And in addition, it's the department that can translate what that actually means, what that customer insight means, to other departments within the business. And those departments, whether it's finance, whether it's the office of the chief executive, whether it's technology, as a result of the behavior change we've seen, have just had to listen. They've had to, you know, open up their ears and listen to what marketing's having to say about the changes to the way customers interact with the brand and the business. And those businesses that have done it well have succeeded and flown as a result.
What do you think are the challenges to marketing's ability to drive that growth?
I think there's sort of four, really. I mean, we pick them out in the report. But I think it's a couple of things. I think one is what we did see in the data was this sense that senior marketers, those that were switched on, those that had influence, those that were able to shape the strategic direction of their business, felt very, very confident that they could drive growth. Mm. But as you step two or three layers down from that boardroom position to the sort of SVP or director and head of department roles, we found, and we've spoken to, you know, partners of ours, we work closely with a company called TML Partners, a big recruitment company, on a number of our events, and they themselves have seen this trend play out in some of their conversations with their clients. You know, there are a quite a frustrated bunch of folk at that mid-senior level, you'd argue, who are neither fish nor fowl. They're not driving the strategy forward in the way that they hope that they can and they feel that they're capable of doing, but neither are they at the front line doing the marketing that they were trained to do. They're sort of somewhere in that middle management place. And we see many of those people deciding that actually marketing and CMO roles aren't really for them anymore. And I'm sure we'll come onto that later on. I think one of the other challenges is this sort of alignment on the overall goal is pretty good. So CEOs and CMOs pretty much most of the time, according to the data we have, they sort of align on where they're headed, but they don't align on how to get there. They don't align on the things that need to be done. They don't align on the focus areas. Nowhere is this more true than in financial services. We'll be bringing out a sort of a companion report called From Chaos to Opportunity, I think on April 15th, which focuses on the financial services industry, because we had a lot of financial services respondents to the study. And one of the things we find in that is that the priorities of marketers, not just in financial services, but in financial services in particular, are all skewed towards this idea of growth, growth of customer base, growth of kind of profitability of the existing customer base. Whereas the chief executives are much more focused on, I guess what you'd call more sort of shaping global forces and how they can influence those with their strategy. So whether that's working out what you're doing from an economic and social good perspective, or whether that's working out, actually, we're not about growing our existing customer base. We need to innovate and create new products to go and find new customers in different parts of the value chain that we haven't been able to access before. And so there's sort of this differential between what marketing thinks they should be doing to reach the goal and what the CEOs want marketing to be doing to change how they reach the goal. I think the third one is that age old one, really, which is that sort of let's focus on the short term and the long term will sort of solve itself, which is not quite right. I think it should be the other way around, right? And I think CEOs have a bit of blame to shoulder here. You know, we get the sense that they sort of want their cake and eat it too. They want marketing to focus on delivering strategic change in the long term, but also to have next week or next month or next quarter's numbers absolutely on the table perfectly as they should be, and reaching short term targets. And I think that's hard. I think you have to be choiceful, to use Raj Kumar's lovely phrase. You have to be choiceful about what you focus on. It's not about prioritization, it's about being choiceful. Because if you just write prioritization it's just reordering a list. Whereas if you're choiceful, it means that you're taking things off the list that you're not going to do. And I think there's a bit of a learning here where actually CMOs and CEOs and other senior roles in that marketing role have to get in the room together, and they have to agree that if we're going to do this, it means that we cannot and should not do this, not we'll do that in 6 months' time. Because that then gives the clarity, obviously that's what we're all about, but it gives the clarity for those people in the roles, not just at very senior level, but right through the marketing organization, of what they have to do and when. And then the final part to this one, I think, is this, which is sort of related, I guess, is this idea of being stretched in too many different directions. I mean, I, in particular, as a marketing director, have felt like we're being pulled in lots of directions, particularly as a result of the COVID crisis. You know, from one minute being asked, you know, what streaming platform are we going to use to throw our podcasts and our webinars out across LinkedIn Live and YouTube Live and all the other things? Then, you know, what Zoom backgrounds can we have created, through to what should our overarching strategy be for opening up agile innovation inside FMCG businesses? If all at the same time, all on the same week, you know, all with equal importance to the business, you know, if you're being pulled in that many different directions at the same time as having your resources reduced, which many of the marketing profession have had, particularly in B2B, I know there have been a lot of people who've dealt with their teams being on furlough or having to make redundancies, and you know, sadly that will continue for a period of time, although hopefully less severely than we thought at the beginning of the crisis. But if you're operating on the basis of needing to do more with less, then you're going to find your capacity and your capability being stretched and things just not being delivered to the value and the level that you need. So I think that's the fourth element that's holding it back.
And then how can marketing craft a growth strategy, you know, that overcomes those different obstacles that you iterate there?
I think there's sort of, again, we sort of say four things really that we talk about. One is sort of defining the shape of your chaos, which sounds enormous actually when you say it like that. But when you define the shape of your chaos, what you're doing is you're trying to pick out the things that matter to you. I think one of the big mistakes that people make when putting together strategies is that they look to the strategies of others. I can't say with who, but we worked with a business once who came to us and said, we like what Spotify have done from a strategy perspective. Can we just use their strategy? And it was a business in a similar space, but with a totally different understanding of how they went to market, the customers they were aiming for, all sorts of things were different. And that's the thing about good strategy, is it can't be off the peg. You have to adapt it to the specifics and the requirements of your own business and your own customer base and the aims that you have. So we argue that fundamentally you have to kind of define your own shape of chaos. And that means looking at externally, what are the big shaping forces that are coming down the track over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years that are going to affect how you go to market in your category and that will affect outside of your category in a way that impacts how you do business. Then inside your category, what are those category forces that are happening right now or over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years that you need to get your arms around and recognize that on in some of those areas, some of your competitors will be outcompeting you and either you need to make a decision to invest to outcompete them or just let them have that and do something different. Mm-hmm. And then the final part on the external piece is the experience forces, which is, you know, understanding at the customer level, what are we doing? And what are customers experiencing day to day? What channels, what issues are they facing in the channels that they operate in that we can address and address quickly through use and judicious use of data and insights? And then what usually happens is everyone stops there and they go, right, well, we've got all the external forces and stuff nailed down. We can write a brilliant strategy and off we go for growth. We would very strongly argue that that's missing probably at least 50% of the issue, if not more, which is that you've got the internal forces that also cause chaos. And those are strategic forces inside your organization, i.e. the inability for certain parts of the business to align behind the strategy through structural problems, through a misunderstanding at board level, a fundamental problem at board level of not really getting how a particular division or part of the organization will work under this new strategy. Then there's that capability gap problem, which is where you say, oh, we've got the perfect strategy and we know exactly what we need to do. And then you look down and you work out that actually the team you've spent 20 years building does not have the skills, capabilities and understanding to take that business forward against the big shaping forces that you've identified, both outside the category and within. And then it's the final part is that experience delivery lens, which is, you know, how are we able to deliver all of the things we said we're going to do externally with the team and structure we have internally? And we talked for 2 or 3 years as clear about the idea of experience gaps, you know, the gap between the promises that businesses and brands make and the experience that they deliver to their customers. And those gaps are yawning and have remained, if not the same, they've probably, I'd argue, grown as a result of the crisis that we operate in. So unless you think about how you're going to define your own chaos and get your handle around it and work out what your particular individual business's approach to dealing with those elements is, you'll A, fall behind, and B, you'll end up undifferentiated and not very distinctive against your competition. So that's the first job. Then the next job, so once you've done that, they're actually a lot easier and a lot faster because you then just need a prioritization framework. You need a sort of choiceful moves framework where you can go, right, what do we do quickly? And we argue you probably need 3 dimensions on that. One is very quickly your ability to influence that thing. You know, how well set is your business right now to influence that issue right now or in future? 2 is how long is it going to take you to make an impact? You know, can you do it now? Can you do it next month, next year? Or is this going to take lots of time and money and investment? And then the final bit, which is sort of the size of the bubble on the chart, which is actually how much impact will this have on your business in terms of commercial value? You know, what do you think this will cause in terms of positive impact on your P&L? Because once you've done that, once you've looked at, you know, the commercial impact, your ability to influence it and how long it's going to take, you can very quickly go, right, well, this is something we can do quickly. It's going to have a heavy impact and we can do tomorrow. Brilliant. Let's get on with it. And also you can start to make choices about the longer term stuff and say, well, actually, we have a right to play. We think it's going to have a massive impact. It's going to take us a long time, but we need to invest in this now to get ahead. And once you've done that, you've sort of done most of the heavy lifting because then it's about just putting the right structure in place. We have a nice little thing that we call our growth framework that I won't go into now in lots of detail, but in the report, you can read it. It's a very simple stuff. You pick, once you've got your quick win, strategic moves and transformative bets, you then work out how to engage your business, mobilize them, operationalize the work you need to do, and then adapt as you go, because that last piece about being adaptable is crucial in a world where fixed strategy is pretty much dead.
Mm-hmm. So we've mentioned the report a few times. How can marketers find out more about your research, Gavin?
So they can go to clearstrategy.com /chaos to clarity and download the report. More than welcome to do that. They can get in touch with Clear, obviously. It's also been featured in Marketing Dive. We've been lucky enough to work quite closely with Pete Markey, the new CMO of Boots and the previous CMO of TSB, and a few others. They'd be more than welcome, if they're in the financial services space, or even if they're just interested in finding out more, to come to the launch event for From Chaos to Opportunity on the 15th of April, which will have some B2B angles to it. We'll be featuring some speakers from the B2B marketing world in that event. So lots of different ways you can get a bit more information about it.
It's great talking to you about it. Gavin Jones, Global Marketing Director of Clear. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Dave.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Ben Brown, the Director of Session Media, to celebrate it. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Great to be on.
It's good to see you. So tell us a bit about Session Media.
Yeah, no problem. So Session Media is a B2B digital marketing agency based in Surrey. There's two primary sides to what we do. One is making sure in the B2B space for clients we capture demand. So we make sure clients appear in search engines when people type in queries related to their product or service, whether that's the organic search through a process we have or through bidding on it in the PPC ads at the top, like Google Ads, for example. The other side of our business is all around creating demand. So using paid social channels to really get across a company's selling point and value prop and really expediting, you know, how quickly then people will see the ad and literally do some more research into their brand down the line. So really just trying to inform and create demand for it. So two sides of the coin, really.
Very good. So great business marketing and communications. What's caught your eye?
So it's probably caught my eye and everyone's eye, probably for different reasons. I think it's a bit Marmite, but it's the Monday.com ads. I'm not sure if you've seen them, Dave, on LinkedIn at all. Not LinkedIn, sorry, YouTube. Yeah, they're absolutely everywhere. And I think about a year ago, I saw them so much and it did irritate me. But I think the reason I like them so much is it's the only attributable, I think, ad, which wasn't a search engine ad, which I can, you know in myself that converted me. I think we were in a stage where we were using Trello, the project management tool, when we needed something that's slightly more sophisticated. I remember seeing these ads and they did annoy me, but they did actually catch my attention. So we did actually go on to use Monday for about a year. And the impressive thing, apart from acquiring me from paid social ads or YouTube ads, the great thing is that I don't actually think their product's that great. And I'm not saying that because I absolutely love Asana. We moved to that, but Monday it's not bad, but there's just a lot of information always there. So I think if they had a product that was as good as their marketing, they would do very, very well. But I imagine their new client acquisition is quite high.
So what was it about the ad that got your attention?
I think it's the production. I think two things. One is the production value of it was very high. It was very clear messaging. It was very well done. And it was very clear who it was targeting. And I may have just been because I was sort of the exact target persona at the time that it worked so well. They do get their message across very clear in a very, I think it's quite a nice brand tone of voice they have as well in it. I think they had some issues with their frequency capping at the beginning because I saw the same ad probably about 100 times, whereas now they have a lot of more variation of ads, of which I think I've never seen one more than two or three times now, which is much better. So it probably is evolving with that. But yeah, the best thing about it and the reason I love it so much is you never really see B2B companies taking advantage of YouTube ads. And the great thing about it, so Monday.com and Wix are probably the two that do it really well. I'm not quite sure of any other ones that do it that same level. But the great thing about YouTube ads, especially skippable ads they use, skippable ads are those ones that you can skip after a couple of seconds, up to 10 seconds, I believe.
Yeah.
You only actually pay for skippable ads if someone watches more than 30 seconds of your ad itself. So ultimately, up to 30 seconds, you're getting free view and you only actually pay for someone who is engaged in your ad itself. And even better, because we run so many YouTube ads across the DevOps, tech, cloud computing, all different types of industry spaces. You know, on average, we're looking with a good view through rate, we're looking at, you know, 5p per view. So the cost is so, so low. You only pay when you have at least a semi-engaged user. And unlike paying, you know, millions of dollars for TV ads, which is completely above the line, in most cases, it's performance marketing as well. So they've used the production value they would have used on TV ads and translated it into mass YouTube spend, and their targeting has been broad, but I imagine quite good.
So having praised and then dissed Monday, this has now become an advert for YouTube clickable ads. I was going to ask you what you've learned that you will apply to future work. Is the answer to that question as simple as use YouTube clickable ads?
Yeah, so with YouTube, really repurposing, rather than with TV ads, obviously the production value is quite high. Repurposing that and using it on performance platforms where you can actually track the attribution from that quite highly is really impressive. So what they've done is they've taken, I imagine, what would have been historically a large TV advert and put it into YouTube first ads, which is, I think, is really impressive. And I think it is quite a bold move for a software company, because it's not something that I think you could take to a CEO, which is, you know, who has been a CEO for a long time, and say, this is where we should be investing X amount of money. But I do think they'd look for a return before necessarily, you know, putting that much money in. But it seems like from the kickoff, it's been going really hard. They've chosen that, they stuck with it. And I think the acquisition and marketing strategy in itself has been really powerful. Like I said, love it or hate it. But yeah, there's quite a lot of reasons why I do like that approach they've taken.
It's great talking to you. Ben Brown, Director of Session Media. Thanks very much. Next up, Sean Cole shares a key lesson that he's taken on his career journey to being account director at Bourne. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, David. Nice to meet you.
Hey there. So first of all, before we get started, tell us a bit about Bourne.
Bourne Agency is a full service graphic design agency, small boutique, multi-skilled. Each member of the team has a slightly different skill set. So when you pull us all together, you get a great collaboration. Small team, like I said, want to grow, but never want to be too large.
Okay. And you're account director there. So how did you get there, Sean?
Well, I was one of the founder members with Ben Trafford, my business partner. He's the creative director. And it was around 4 years ago. Yeah, 4 years ago, we're now in our fifth year, where we decided to take the plunge, do what's scary, put life savings in and start our own agency after working together for many years in another larger agency.
But what's the kind of tipping point there? Because I mean, clearly, I speak on this podcast actually to a lot of people who have founded agencies in their time. Is it that you have to build up a certain amount of requisite experience to be able to feel like you can do that? Or is there just a point where you kind of get up in the morning and say, right, I'm going to found an agency today?
For me personally, it was a slow burn. I've only ever been in creative. You know, I've started in production. I've then gone into account management and then built into account directorship. And I suppose it's a confidence thing. You have a personal reputation as well as the agency you're working for, don't you? You know, I've worked in three agencies in my life, four total jobs. One was slightly more productive. But and you build that confidence and relationships with people over the years. So there becomes a tipping point where you think, I really need to be doing this for me now. And it was just perfect timing. Ben was in the same position. And, you know, I think it was a natural progression for us both that one day we had that conversation. This perhaps ought to be us now. And this is our time.
So I get the confidence bit, but I wonder whether there is maybe it's not even a kind of a kind of conscious thing, but whether there are certain experiences you need to get under your belt.
I think so. Yeah,
to get that. So I wonder what do you see those experiences as being?
Mine was without being disrespectful to anybody. Mine was seeing somebody who owned an agency who I really didn't think, I thought I could do the job better.
Right. So,
you know, that's putting it in a nutshell. I thought I can do this better. And I think I can take an agency myself forward. I knew I had the right business partner. We are very similar. We have the same values, which is very important. He's a very skilled creative director. And I just, you know, I knew that was a perfect marriage of teams, myself and him. And then we knew who we wanted to cherry pick to bring into the team. So,
and what skills do you bring to the party?
Mine's communication. Mine is definitely communication, and I'm very dyslexic. Everybody that knows me knows that, and I actually think that helps me massively with thinking around campaigns, ideas, how we can get solved problem solving. So, you know, the team that work with me know that if I go into a corner with a scribble pad, they know I'm thinking things through, and it may be wildly adventurous, but then when the team come back into it, they can tone it down, add things in, and that's when the team sort of pulls everything together. But yeah, that's me.
And to get to that point in time where you felt that you had the kind of requisite skills to be able to found an agency, were there kind of specific skills that from a communications perspective you had to acquire?
Yeah, it is. I mean, over the years, I've been very lucky. I've worked for people who have invested in training, and I have been one of those lucky people that has been very heavily trained, from reading body language to open questions and the whole that side of things. I'm a big believer in looking after clients incredibly well, so you get a relationship, not just a project by project. You know, I keep in contact with people for many, many years, whether they're still trading with me or not. And then two or three years later, you come back into favor and then doors open again. So it's building relationships, good communication skills, being able to read meetings, how meetings are going, presentation skills. That's my side of things. And that's the bit I really thrive on and love.
How can other people go about acquiring the skill of being able to read a meeting well?
I think I've done a lot of shadowing in my time. In this part of my training process, I was lucky enough to go and work in New York for Milton Glaser, shadowed them as an agency. I've been to Scotland and worked for Graven Images, shadowing them. So I've been very, very lucky where I've been sat in meetings with people with much more experience, and I've picked up how they've done it and then applied. Mm. So I think by shadowing people is a great way of doing it. By observing, being very observant in meetings and seeing how questions are answered and applied. And that is a skill. That is a skill that I know that it took me a while to tune and fine tune. But I know I'm pretty good at it. So I'm told by clients that I hold meetings well. So that's a nice thing to hear.
Very good. Well, you've held this interview very well. So Sean Cole,
thank you.
Director of Bourne, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Garen Jones, Ben Brown and Sean Cole. Thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. And thanks to you for listening. There's more where this came from at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.